The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hey, people. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for June 18th, 2021. As per what is occasionally a Thunderbolt tradition, we're going to start off this week's show with an existential question. Specifically, are you aware of the various surfaces in your life that come into direct contact with the nether regions of your feline companions? Or in other words, do you know where your cat's anus has been? Well, this question recently became of such concern to a sixth grader from Tennessee named Caden Griffin. And he decided to apply scientific process and compile empirical evidence to demonstrate just where his cats were wiping their rear ends. But he needed a method that did no harm to his cats. Because it turned out that Caden conveniently not only lived with two cats, but Taco had short hair, whilst Maya had long hair, and thus Caden had a diversity of test subjects. And in order to track the rear ends, Caden simply applied non-toxic lipstick to their bum holes. Easy peasy. In addition, Caden has now published his report, and as a public service, the Thunderbolt will now share Caden's results. Quote, long and medium-haired cats made no actual contact with soft or hard surfaces at all. Short-haired cats made no contact on hard surfaces, but we did see evidence of a slight smear on the soft bedding surface. So Caden concludes, if you have a short-haired cat and they may be lying on a pile of laundry, an unmade bed, or another soft, uneven surface, then their anus may come into contact with those surfaces. Unquote. So we should all give thanks to young Caden Griffin for making us aware of the true facts behind the controversy. It is always good to be aware of life's hazards. And in yet another good news story, I have just learned of yet more promising research that is using plants to remediate toxic substances. In this case, scientists have genetically modified some grass with some genes from some bacteria. And presto,
exciting, and
the carcinogenic chemical known as RDX, a chemical
we're expecting
that contaminates military bases all over the planet.
Life's sweetest reward.
And with these new grasses, all of the RDX gets sucked up into the plants.
It floats back to you.
Where it gets broken down into harmless substances.
Soon we'll be making another run.
Yes, this is genetic engineering. A technology
promises something for it
that I have been hypercritical of. I acknowledge that genetic engineering can potentially produce a wide plethora of truly miraculous seeming results. I've never said otherwise.
It's an open smile.
My critique consists of the fact
on a
that in using bacteria or viruses to transmit genetic information between species, they are completely bypassing some genetic firewalls that have evolved over billions of years to protect us from all kinds of truly nasty stuff. The genes also do completely different things when placed in different contexts. And there is no way of knowing what those things might be. And the main problem with genetic engineering is if they ever do unleash some organism or some gene that proves to be problematic for any reason, then there is no taking it back. Since whatever they've unleashed is now literally embedded into some bacterial or viral genome. I have no problem with saying goodbye to RDX. Good riddance. I just worry about what we're saying hello to. And now it's the time you've all been waiting for. It's time to clear up some cataracts. Because the toothless old grandpa is here to take us away. Hey, grandpa, how's things going these days?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Why, in fact, yes, I would. That's why I asked.
Now, maybe, but how do I know you don't have some impure motives or some dark hidden political agenda here?
Really? After all these years of wearing my heart on my sleeve and all of the true confessions and bearing of souls that I've done on this program, and you still don't trust me? Frankly, I think that says a lot more about you than it does about me.
Yeah? Well, you can take your psychological fuzzies and stick them somewhere that never experiences direct sunlight.
Okay, maybe I'll do just that. So, what do you have for us this week, Grandpa?
Well, since I like to boldly go where other radio show hosts are too wimpy to tread, then this week I think I'm gonna advocate canceling
cancel culture. Yes, people, throughout history, constantly keeping the working classes at each other's throats has always played a central role in the strategy that the elites use to maintain their control. Therefore, it is of deep concern that large portions of the activist left these days seems to have adopted a mentality that more resembles that of authoritarian religious fanatics rather than strategically minded political operatives who are trying to bring actual change. This development is of concern for numerous reasons, not the least of which being that authoritarian religious fanatics tend to keep us at each other's throats at the very time we need to unite. Getting anything real done requires public support, period. When fanatics come onto the scene, it often seems as if they intentionally try to piss everyone off and divide our ranks. It's almost as if they are trying to lose public support. Consider this: a large majority of Americans already support Medicare for All. A large majority of Americans already support major changes in the way we police. A large majority of Americans agree that poverty and systemic racism are serious problems. However, rather than trying to unite people behind policies that actually have public support, the left is instead yelling at and insulting everyone who doesn't agree with them on every single issue. They are keeping us distracted with having to deal with a bunch of their manufactured bullshit rather than actually working on the actual issues that actually need to be worked upon. Now I'm convinced that this is the reason that public support for Black Lives Matter, after having achieved a major peak just after the George Floyd murder, then plummeted to the point that by the end of the summer, BLM actually had less public support than they had had before the George Floyd incident. Now I'm convinced that this loss was due largely to these mostly white actors. A lot of people find self-righteous fanatics screaming profanity and insults at everyone who disagrees with them to be a turnoff. I myself find self-righteous fanatics screaming profanity and insults at everyone who disagrees with them to be a turn-off. Now keep in mind that this new left has no interest in debate, as is common with authoritarian religious fanatics. This woke crowd already knows everything, and therefore, anyone who does not 100% agree with them on every single issue is designated as an enemy. And therefore, as is also common with authoritarian religious fanatics, if anyone
ever actually dares to criticize them for any reason, then rather than attempting to refute or debate or responding to such criticism in any kind of rational manner, they instead attempt to kill the message by killing the messenger. They seek to personally discredit and destroy that person as a person. This mentality is ripping the left apart. The elites are probably enjoying Big Bella laughs as they watch the peons trashing each other over mostly pure bullshit, whilst the elites themselves merely continue with their nasty, murderous plots, largely unchallenged. And in fact, a cabal of such fanatics has come to dominate the staff at the Olympia Food Co-op. The several co-op staffers and volunteers have reported to me that working there has become, as one reported, like walking on eggshells due to fear of violating any of a lengthy list of politically incorrect actions, words, thoughts, or deeds that would trigger an intervention on the part of these select staffers who have appointed themselves as the enforcers of their version of correctness. They have assumed the power to take punitive measures against anyone who violates their numerous and ever-changing code of conduct. The fact is that if you kill the messenger, then you ipso facto kill the message, and thus do not need to answer the message. If no one ever questions, then no one ever needs to provide any answers. When I was a kid, it was the right that was always trying to censor everyone, and the left were the radical defenders of free speech. So when did that paradigm get turned completely on its head? Who needs friggin' agents provocateur? The left is eating its own. Grandpa, nobody says it like you. Well, son, nobody unsays it like them. So Big Pharma is amongst the biggest lobbyists on Capitol Hill. In addition, people with big connections to Big Pharma,
I wanna be loved by you, just to you and nobody else but you,
infest Joe Biden's White House from the top to the bottom. White House advisor Anita Dunn, for instance, is one of the closest advisors to the Biden administration. And Ms. Dunn was Biden's de facto campaign manager for his presidential campaign. Ms. Dunn is also the co-founder of SKDK, a consulting firm that represents Pfizer. Ms. Dunn has, in fact, engaged in a lot of PR and advertising for Pfizer.
We love our life!
Biden's domestic policy advisor, Susan Rice, holds up to 5 million in Johnson & Johnson shares.
We're brave and bold.
And White House science advisor,
I wanna be kissed by you,
Eric Lander, holds up to 1 million in shares of BioNTech, which co-developed Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine. Therefore, it shouldn't really surprise anyone that in spite of the fact that during his presidential campaign, Joe Biden,
I wanna be loved by you, just you and nobody else but you,
forcefully and passionately promised to restrict patent protections for COVID vaccines in order to make them more widely available and at cheaper prices to the third world. At first, Biden tried to completely renege on that promise, but he got so much blowback for that that evidently he is now resorting to the tactic of telling the public that he will support suspending patent protections
out on a handshake bed and my spirit did a midnight,
whilst knowing full well that you will never actually do anything about it. Bill Gates, the self-appointed health czar for the whole frigging world, is also fighting to protect patent restrictions on COVID vaccines. And partly as a result of these patent laws, there is now a vaccine glut in the first world, even as the third world goes begging and dying. This is pretty much what always happens when market forces are allowed to rule the world without any consideration for any other interests. And partly as a result of these patent laws, the state of Florida has received more vaccine doses than the entire continent of Africa. And partly as a result of these patent laws, when combined with those aforementioned market forces, India is experiencing serious COVID-19 vaccine shortages and a massive death wave as a result of that shortage. And this is in spite of the fact that Indian factories are by far the largest manufacturers of COVID-19 vaccines in the world. But rather than dealing with these outrages, the pandemic profiteers are instead unleashing armies of lobbyists to protect their patents in order to make sure that no one else can make a larger volume of vaccines for cheaper, in spite of the fact that these patent restrictions are already killing lots of people. And even though these patent restrictions are likely to become directly responsible for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of unnecessary deaths in the near future, and these activities should surprise no one. I've been reporting on exactly this kind of stuff ever since the very first airing of this radio program. This kind of stuff is what they always do. Partly because this form of mass murder is not only legal, but the law, in fact, actually protects it. That is because these same people also own the people that make all those laws. Over and over and over again, they have proven that their profits are always more important than our lives. And they are the ones who are making all of the major policy decisions that affect both their profits and our lives. That is kind of like the ultimate conflict of interest. And they make all of those decisions in spite of the fact that those kinds of things are what those kinds of people always do. Invariably, inevitably, it is their default position. And I believe the fact that we should not be surprised by their willingness to commit mass murder for profit, or that the law protects such murderous activities, lies at the very core of everything else that is wrong with our world. And it's time for a station break now. The Thunderbolt will be back in just a minute.
This program is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. If this program makes your head explode or causes emotional distress, or if you suddenly feel as if life suddenly isn't worth living anymore due to the things you learn on this program, then you should blame yourself for the fact that you're such a wimp that you let the world push you around in such a manner, rather than blaming the producers of some radio show, much less blaming the radio station that is airing the show. And you should maybe soon become a Zen master and or a used car salesman and or an astronaut or whatever, rather than trying to educate yourself about things that are simply going to twist your worldview into a pretzel, making your continued existence on this plane problematic. If you have useful suggestions, or if you wish to participate in a meaningful debate, then bring it on. But otherwise, if you aren't going to help, then please just shut up and get out of our way, so that we can do what needs to be done. Have a nice day.
So I once heard Rush Limbaugh rhetorically ask that if $15 per hour for a minimum wage is so great, then why not make it $40 or $50 per hour? Right. And if two aspirin are good for a headache, then why not take an entire bottle? Not that I am an unquestioning fan of the minimum wage myself, at least as it is implemented in this country anyway. While I support minimum wages as a concept, at the same time, I think it is crazy to have a single minimum wage for the entire country. You could live like a king in Browning, Montana on $15 per hour, whereas you could barely afford to rent a closet in Seattle on that. I also think it is crazy to not index any minimum wage to the cost of living. Well, several jurisdictions have significantly increased their minimum wage over the last few years, and so lots of data is coming in. But when you dig into that data, it turns out that it is nuanced and subject to context and influences from other areas. And since the minimum wage has become a highly politicized issue, then all of that means that both sides can find, quote, facts, unquote, to fit their narrative. For one thing, as it is with many things, raising the minimum wage seems to create winners and losers. Skilled workers and long-established workers do very well, but overall, raising the minimum wage evidently makes it much harder for teenagers to find their first job. And overall, it seems to have mostly negative effects upon the lowest income people. Okay. So you can create government programs to encourage employers not to hire teenagers, and you can patch whatever is causing harm to the lowest income people. But due to the somewhat ambiguous nature of the data, economists these days tend to be highly reluctant to express their opinions about the efficacy of minimum wages. And these are people that are usually ready to express an opinion about pretty much anything, whether they actually know what they're talking about or not. This doesn't seem like that big a deal, but evidently it is either or and or all or nothing in this partisan political world these days. And so, alas, neither regional minimum wages nor indexing those wages to the cost of living seems to be on the horizon anytime soon. So for a long time now, I've been reporting upon how, for his entire career, Joe Biden has always been an utterly corrupt tool of the Wall Street war machine, and that he has been on the wrong side of nearly every issue that has ever been. He was all for gutting welfare. He was all for the war on drugs. He was for insane prison sentences for users of crack cocaine. He was all in for mandatory minimums. He was all up for Vietnam. He was all for Afghanistan. He was one of the main pushers for the invasion and occupation of Iraq. But I do have to say that, to his credit, he was leery of the intervention into Libya and Syria. Unlike Anthony Blinken and so many other members of his senior staff. However, I also reported that Joe Biden was exceeding my admittedly very low expectations. And that is actually an historic event. As every other president during my entire adult life has managed to either slither under the already low bar that I had set for them, no matter how low I set it. Also, Joe Biden has an opportunity to become a truly transformative president here. And surely, he realizes that. Neither FDR nor JFK were originally elected pushing populist policy. And in fact, both men were imperialist, warmongering capitalists until they found themselves as president of the United States at a time when they could use that office to introduce some truly amazing things. Therefore, for Joe Biden to exceed my expectations is actually quite refreshing. That said, though, as good as Biden has been doing on domestic affairs, it would seem that when it comes to things like foreign meddling and American imperialism and the never-ending interventionist wars, and as far as providing blank checks to Israel, well, not so much. And as I'm about to reveal, Joe Biden has always been a big supporter of the secret police state in general and of the CIA in particular. Yes, it would seem that everything is indeed going to return to business as usual, just as Joe Biden promised. And keeping a campaign promise is yet another highly unusual occurrence, especially for a Democrat. So you may remember I reported a while back that Anthony Blinken was over in Asia wagging his little penis at the Chinese. The Chinese were not only unimpressed, but they responded by publicly pointing out in detail just how small Anthony Blinken's penis is. And I found it very interesting that I could not find anything but brief quotes from the Chinese response in any of the mainstream media outlets, nor even my usual left-wing sources. And thus, I had to resort to a freaking partisan right-wing website to get the actual Chinese response. And here are a few choice quotes. China is firmly opposed to U.S. interference in China's internal affairs. We have expressed our staunch opposition to such interference, and we will take firm actions in response. And then, referring to the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States, the Chinese stated that, quote, "We hope the United States will do better on human rights." The Chinese then concluded with this: "Let me say here that from the Chinese side, the United States does not have the qualification to say that it wants to speak to China from a position of strength." Snap. Since both Blinken's accusations towards the Chinese were mostly more or less true, and since the Chinese accusations against the Americans were also mostly more or less true, then what these exchanges represented was a couple of politicians actually telling the truth for an extended period of time. That is an incredibly rare event. When Blinken accused the Chinese of, quote, grandstanding, the Chinese rep responded to that by saying, quote, "It was the United States who provoked and provoked the dispute first. Therefore, the two sides were full of gunpowder and drama in the opening remarks from the beginning. That was not the original intention of the Chinese side." Unquote. Anyway, those of you who were paying attention back during the Reagan era probably remember William Casey, Ronald Reagan's infamous CIA director and possessor of everybody's dirty laundry, who very conveniently died of a, quote, heart attack, unquote, the very day before he was scheduled to begin testifying to a Senate committee concerning some dirty laundry from Iran-Contra that truly and epically reeked. Daniel Boguslaw, Boguslaw, writing for Global Research News, describes William Casey well. Quote, When it comes to villainous bureaucrats, it's hard to assign a ranking for the most sinister aura, cumulative harm wrought upon humanity, and general unpleasantness wrapped up in one. But Ronald Reagan's CIA chief, William Casey, is definitely near the head of that pack. Well, guess what, people? Bill Casey and Joe Biden were not only buds from way back, but records in the CIA Crest Archive, unsealed in 2017, detail Joe Biden's role in supporting Casey's rise and Joe Biden's vital assistance in ushering in one of the darkest eras in the CIA's history. For his entire career, Joe Biden has always been a big fan of the CIA. At one point, Biden trashed the Justice Department for looking into CIA criminal activities. And both Joe and his old buddy Bill shared a pure and utter hatred for leakers and whistleblowers. Oh, that makes me wonder exactly what it is that the CIA has on Joe Biden. But whatever that may be, I guess that is yet another sign that we are indeed moving back towards business as usual. But being happy about that news requires the assumption that business as usual is in any way acceptable. Personally, I think that it is time to conduct some business as unusual. That's it for the news and commentary, which means it's time to get to work. After a short music break.
All right, and as for that musical break, I discovered Karen Matheson a few years ago, and I've never regretted it. Here's some Irish music for your delectation.
Shimmer at the corner, shimmer at the rainy, shimmer at the corner, me and my Reiche. Von der Mine fisch ich gerne, fisch ich gerne, fisch ich gerne. Von der Mine fisch ich gerne, spür ich für einen Deutsche. Von der Mine fisch ich gerne, fisch ich gerne, fisch ich gerne. Von der Mine fisch ich gerne, spür ich für einen Deutsche.
Thank you.
I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation, but that song was called Omyre's to Momyre. And before that, we had Peart Abuel. So that's it for this week. See you next week. And in the meanwhile...
The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day.
And you may want to grab a pen or something, because I'm about to give you some information. If you like what you hear here on the Thunderbolt, then the Thunderbolt archives are stored at dana98501.wordpress.com. That's DANA98501, which is the downtown Olympia zip code, .wordpress.com. And if you would like to continue hearing the Thunderbolt, you can contribute to our cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. And
thank you very much.